After years on the road, Toomey parked the van and picked up the mic to bring you this podcast that features interviews with people from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk Toomey with your host, Joshua Toomey.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me, episode 45. And on this episode, I speak to Mike Howe of Metal Church. And then I also have the segment Something Old, Something New with my friend Stephen Anthony of the Pro Wrestling Cast, where we're going to break down Blessing in Disguise and Metal Church's new album, 11. So let's get to some sponsors so we can get to our show. As always, guys, the Talk To Me podcast is brought to you by puckhockey.com, and that's P-U-C-K-H-C-K-Y.com. Head on over there and check out their signature series line with Marian Hossa, their Thrashers and Slashers line with David Ellefson, 36 Crazy Fists, Bumblefoot, The First Jason, and Tom Hazard. And then check out their collaborations with B-Rich, the Ice Guardians. You know that Puck Hockey is a boutique brand, and none of their apparel is mass-produced. In fact, they don't aspire to be the next Reebok, CCM, Adidas Shell Toes. They want to ensure that you are getting a truly special and unique product that has been personally approved by the athletes, musicians, and artists themselves. And they love adding the little extras like custom labeling, one-of-a-kind zipper pulls, cool stickers, etc. And the goal is to engage you in total hockeydom, and they look forward to pushing the boundaries and exceeding your expectations of what a hockey brand can be. So yes, guys, head on over to puckhockey.com, and that's P-U-C-K-H-C-K-Y.com. Shop until you drop, and enter TALK into the promo line when you check out for 10% off your entire order. Yes, enter TALK, T-A-L-K, in the promo line when you check out for 10% off your entire order. Talk To Me is also brought to you by the Talk To Me t-shirt, so head on over to Amazon.com, search out the Talk To Me podcast, get yourself a Talk To Me t-shirt. They come in men's sizes, women's sizes, and even kids' sizes, so you can outfit the entire family in Talk To Me t-shirts. $20 and free shipping with Amazon Prime, so head on over, get yourself a Talk To Me t-shirt today.
Hey everybody, this is David Ellison from Megadeth, and you're listening to the Talk To Me podcast.
All right, guys, it's now time for shout-outs for sharing, and that's shout-outs for sharing the podcast on Facebook and Twitter. And if you want a shout-out on a future episode of the Talk To Me podcast, make sure when you see this podcast show up in your feed, hit that share button, hit that retweet button, and you will be shouted out to on a future episode of the Talk To Me podcast. So the shout-outs for sharing the Chad Lee episode of the Talk To Me podcast are as follows. The Daily Rock Report, which is my friend Donnie Harden, Tim Hall, the always beautiful Tabitha Toomey, Donnie Greenwell, John Redding, Chad Lee, thanks for sharing the Chad Lee episode of the Talk To Me podcast, and Chad Lee Photography also shared it, so thanks you guys for sharing the podcast. And the retweets this week are the Shoot the Shred podcast with my friend Eric Hall and the Just In Time podcast, so we need to get those numbers up. So when you see this show up in your feed, make sure you hit that retweet button, make sure you hit that share button, and you will get a proper shout out on a future episode of the Talk To Me podcast. But now, guys, to our man of honor, Mr. Mike Howe of Metal Church, who have just came back with one of the greatest albums of 2016, and that is 11. Metal Church 11, 23 years after leaving Metal Church, Mike Howe has returned, and the voice of Metal Church is back. My Metal Church, my vocalist, Mr. Mike Howe. And if you've heard the tracks like No Tomorrow and Killing Your Time, you know that Metal Church is back and back with a vengeance, and it's great. They are currently on tour over in Europe, and in June they go out with Armored Saint, so they're doing a lot of great stuff. And if you're following Metal Church on Facebook and you're following them on their all of their social media, you get to see all the great stuff that they're doing. So I just can't be happier with all of the stuff going on in the Metal Church camp, and it's just great to have Mike Howe on, and I will continue to fly the flag of Metal Church. So I'm going to play you some Metal Church now. This is Killing Your Time, then in my interview with Mr. Mike Howe.
Down.
We've got Mike Howell on the line here, and the one thing that keeps popping up is Mike Howell is back, and from the fans and from myself, you know, it's just great to see, and, you know, thanks for coming back.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to be back, and I feel very lucky to be back at, you know, this time in my life.
You know, I guess with you being back, I mean, the other question is, you know, where were you?
Yeah, well, I was raising two boys, you know, and living the domestic life like everyone else.
When you know, when Kurt calls you a couple of years ago and kind of throws it out there to kind of come back around into the band and do a band with them, and then you know, the Metal Church thing kind of pops back up, you know, where were you in life, and then what made you say yes?
Well, you know, you spend, you know, 20 years raising boys, and you know, they get older and, you know, a little more self-sufficient as they get older, so you know, you might have a little extra time that you didn't have when they were younger. So that was part of it, and you know, Kurt being the persuasive guy that he is and a good friend of mine, and writing amazing riffs and songs and making me listen to them, and me going, wow, that had a lot to do with it also.
Yeah, the new album is great. You know, I got it back when I interviewed Kurt. I had it a little bit early before it came out, and you know, it was so good to have it, and you know, being such a huge Metal Church fan, and getting that album, and it just totally blew me away, and I was so excited to, you know, hear you with the band again, and then also just hear some great new music.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I'm right in the same boat as you and everyone else who loves metal and loves listening to good metal. I just feel very lucky.
How are you, you know, with everything, you know, just kind of going from the 20 years of domesticated raising boys and from that life back into, you know, the tour buses and playing cruise ships, you know, gigantic festivals, stuff like that. You know, how's that been?
It's been awesome. I mean, it's like a second chance in life, you know, to be playing in a heavy metal band when you're young and touring is you know, you think that's a once in a lifetime chance, but no, it's a twice in a lifetime chance for me. So how lucky can
right?
I be? And, you know, and being, you know, being older and hopefully more wise and mature, I appreciate it way more, and I can just enjoy the moment and each night as it comes way much more than I could when I was 20 and just trying to you know, do what I do and survive it, you know, if you know what I mean, when you're in your 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's been an unbelievable experience, and I'm just filled with gratitude that I'm lucky enough to be able to do this.
So when you left the band in 93, you know, would you have ever thought that this day would come to where, you know, 2016, you're, you know, talking about a new Metal Church album and a, you know, a successful Metal Church tour?
No, not at all. Of course not. No, I thought I was done completely. I had it set in my mind that, no, I was lucky when I was young to do what I've done. And that's in my back pocket, and I'm very proud of that. But no, my life was moved on, and I'm not a person that looks back in life. You know, I'm not a reminiscent kind of guy. I mean, not to say I don't ever, but I mean, it's not my primary drive. I want to do new things and look to the future. So that was one of my main sticking points with Kurt was, you know, if we're going to do this, it's awesome that we're, you know, going back and playing some killer songs that we love from the early days, but we really have to come up with some great music and material that we can be proud of if we're going to do this again. And, you know, the process we took doing that and taking our time and being in full control of every aspect of it was a very important part of that process.
You have such a powerful voice, you know, and when I heard 11 for the first time, you know, it was right back to where it was on, you know, Blessing in Disguise and The Human Factor. What did you do anything between Hanging in the Balance and now, like musically, to keep your voice up, or is it just, you know, what you have inside you?
Yeah, I think it's what's inside me. It was the training that I received from, you know, a guy named David Maestro Kyle. He was, you know, taught me techniques, breathing techniques and enunciation techniques and things when I was in my 20s. And, you know, I think it's equated like riding a bike, you know, when you have muscle memory, brain muscle memory, and your body muscle memory that it takes you back to when you did that. And if you can keep that up and remember that and exercise those same, you know, techniques nowadays, it's served me well. And also, you know, taking care of myself, not, you know, not drinking or partying and sleeping and eating correctly. And that's a big part of it also.
Yeah, that's one thing when they started showing the new press photos and stuff started popping up. You look great, sound great. You can definitely tell that you've taken care of yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I think it's good for anyone to take care of themselves no matter what they do. It's a reward unto yourself. Take care of yourself.
If you're out there listening, take care of yourself.
Uh-huh.
What'd you take away from this interview?
That's right.
A couple things, and obviously, you know, you just said you don't like to reminisce too much, but obviously my podcast, I like to kind of go back and reminisce, so, you know.
Sure.
So
no,
we'll try to be nice. And,
I don't mean not at all. I just mean that
right. My
main goal is going back and reliving my glory days, you know.
Right. No, and that, you know, that was some glorious stuff, though. So, I mean, just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of reading up on you a little bit. I mean, you were born in Michigan, correct?
That's correct. Yes, I was.
And then, so how does the boy from Michigan, you know, make it to Metal Church?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll condense it. I joined a band in Detroit, a heavy metal band, and we did mostly covers when I was 16 years old. And two of my idols were Rob Halford of Judas Priest, which was, you know, half the covers we did, and then Bon Scott of AC/DC was my other idol. So I wanted to kind of meld those two styles together, you know, the power of Rob Halford and the attitude of Bon Scott, and become, you know, those two, you know. And so we did that in Michigan, and we realized we said we got to go out to LA and try to, you know, see if we can make it out there, you know, so to speak. So, well, five of us long hairs got in a van and drove cross country and tried to bang it out in the bars of Los Angeles. And that lasted about a year and a half. And we disbanded, and I joined one of the only other metal bands going around in LA at that time, because at that time it was glam hair bands like Poison and Warrant and Rat and all them there. And we were a hardcore metal band. And so,
what year was that?
It was 84 to 86, I think, approximately. Yeah, that's when I moved out in 84, I think. And so 87, probably to 87, because I joined Metal Church in 88. But so I was doing, yeah, in 88, late 87, I think, I can't recall exactly, as Heretic, the second band I joined after I left the band I was with in Detroit, they had a deal with Metal Blade Records. And so we went into the studio to do their first record, or my first record with them. They had an EP out already. And we had a mutual friend who was trying to help us in L.A. who knew Kurt Vanderhoof and had tour managed one of their early tours. And he had mentioned that Kurt Vanderhoof was looking into producing and expanding, you know, his horizons in the music business. And so we said, yeah, we'd love it if Kurt would come down and produce our album. So Kurt showed up and started producing Heretic, and he and I started working in the studio on vocals together, and we really hit it off. And it was like the first time that we'd ever worked together and realized that we had this chemistry. And during those sessions, he said, you know, Metal Church is looking for a singer. Would you be interested in? And so I said, sure, I'll come out and try out. And so I flew up to Seattle and went into their studio. And Kurt had just written a song he was very excited about, and it was called Anthem to the Estranged. And he wanted me to demo it while I was there trying out for the band, because he really wanted to hear my voice on it. And so they had a little Tascam 4-track, and I demoed, you know, the vocals and did some harmonies over that song, and then rehearsed with the guys and went home. And a week later or so, Kurt called me and said, if you want the job, you got it. And the rest is history, as they say.
Right.
Yeah.
So what was your impressions of Metal Church, you know, the first couple albums? You know, did you have those records? Were they something that was like on your radar, you know, something that you liked?
Yeah, well, you know, this is a tough story, but you know, honestly, I didn't really know much about Metal Church, and what I did know of them, I heard on KNAC down in LA. You know, they played I believe Watch the Children Pray and maybe Start the Fire or something like that. But honestly, you know, David Wayne, although I firmly believe he was an awesome singer in his style, that, you know, the screeching style of heavy metal singers, that was not a style that was into, you know. So I had to say I really wasn't into Metal Church. So when I went up there and started singing with them, I realized, wow, this is a powerful band. When you step into a room with, you know, those players and they start playing and you're singing, you realize you've hit the big time with a band that can really play. So that was very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, not to kiss too much ass, but I mean, you know, definitely your records are my quote unquote Metal Church. You know, they made the proper choice when they got you in the band. And, you know, Blessing in Disguise is still probably one of my top five records of all time. I was listening to it today while driving around, just kind of getting ready for the interview, and just kind of falling down memory lane. And just, you know, it's so funny when you put on an album that you grew up with and then you haven't put it on in a long time. And, you know, just all those songs hit me right back to me, you know, making me feel like I was a teenager again. And, you know, just singing all the words, you know, it's just so funny when you know the words to a song that you haven't listened to in 20 years.
And that's the power of music and the beauty of it, you know, and it's a huge part of why it's so great to be back, because not only does it do it for fans, you know, and that's what I hear on the road is, oh my God, I feel 20 again. And I mean, how awesome is that? And then I feel the same way. So, you know, it's amazing. So it's just a spiritual experience for me, you know, and I'm, once again, I'll say it, and I mean it. I'm grateful and lucky to be where I am today.
So the Blessing in Disguise comes out. You know, you got, you know, the Badlands comes out. It's such a huge song. You know, what's some of the touring that was going on around then? You know, were you just like kind of pinching yourself, trying to figure out if it was really going on?
Yeah, well, it was interesting because, you know, we went in the studio. I was just plunged headlong into this, you know, touring, recording band all of a sudden. And it was very exciting, but it was very stressful too for me, you know, because I realized all the pressures that were self-imposed and imposed from outer pressures as well of, you know, having to perform and do that. And so we went in the studio, recorded Blessing in Disguise, which was great fun. And then to get out on the road, they threw us out on the road for 3 or 4 months just touring our asses off, doing clubs around the United States and Canada and all over. And so, yeah, that took its toll on me, you know, because you're playing 5-6 nights a week and in a bus and trying to eat right and stay healthy. I got sick a lot back in those days. And, you know, that's kind of the thing nowadays that I'm more cognizant of, and taking care of myself, and, you know, and the stress level is much lower because I'm not 20 anymore and I can manage stress. And so those are all things that are good and bad and ugly and great about it all. But I have great memories. Yeah.
That's great. So what do you have any like specific tours that you remember, like some of the bands you went out with that, you know, just kind of blew you away?
Well, I mean, once again, I was lucky to tour with a lot of bands. And, I mean, Metallica, Judas Priest, Motorhead, you know, Accept, Wasp. We toured with a lot of Saxon. I'm sure I'm missing some bands, but we did a lot of great tours. And the one story I like to tell that means a lot to me, you know, because everyone's like, oh, what band did you play with or what show did you play that was memorable to you? And for me, it was more of a personal note, was we were touring with Judas Priest and on the Operation Rock and Roll tour in 1991, and, you know, not only being able to play with my childhood idol and who shaped my vocal style, Rob Halford, but also to go back to your hometown in Michigan, in Detroit at Pine Knob, and have your family come out and see the show. And my mother, who encouraged me to sing from when I was, you know, from when I started walking, was there, and she knew that Rob was, you know, an idol of mine and influenced me. And she'd said before the show, Mike, I'd really like to get a picture with Rob Halford and me. And I said, of course, Mom. And after our show, We'll find him and see if he'll do that for you. I'll ask him. And so after our show, I got dressed and I came out to the meet and greet tent behind the stage. And there's my family at a table sitting down under the tent. And then all across the tent, there's Rob talking to someone with the press. And so I walk over to Rob and I say, Rob, can you do me a favor? And he's like, sure, Mike, anything. And I explained to him that, you know, my mom, you know, knows that he was a big influence and she wanted to get a picture with him. And can he do that? And he says to me in his British accent, he says, well, Mike, you know, your mom is just like me mom. She was already over here and she got her picture taken and she's just right up there and she's awesome. And I was like, looked across the room at my mom and as I was talking to him and I see her like a little girl, like got her hand caught in the cookie jar. And she's just blushing over there. And that was just a priceless moment for me. So now I have this great picture of my mom and Rob Halford from 1991.
That's awesome. And yeah, from everything that I can tell, you know, Rob is probably one of the nicest people in metal too. So
yeah
I could definitely see him being like that.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
We kind of jump into the Human Factor a little bit. And, you know, that album comes out, obviously just another, just a great, great album you guys put out. And then you guys get to go out on the, was that when you went out on the Metallica Wherever We May Roam tour?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, that was a shed tour. That was good to do. That was great. So that was another great tour. I loved. How cool is it to go on a shed tour and open up for Metallica and, you know, be in front of 20,000 people a night? It's crazy. 20,000 more, but
well,
yeah,
I mean,
that was great.
With that too, you know, you guys know the Metallica guys from, you know, the 80s, and then, you know, 91 hits, and the Black album comes out, and it's just, it's mass hysteria, you know. So what was that like, kind of just from the outside looking in, you know, how did that look to you guys? Was it just, was it as insane as, you know, we all saw it?
It was, insane in what way? I don't know. We're very professionals, you know, but it was a great time, great time of being able to play your music for a lot of people in a huge setting. So it was a very big step up professionally in doing bigger shows every night. So that was a lot of fun. But, you know, we had a show earlier in our career that was even cooler because we were playing with Saxon on a tour of Europe, and we went off at the end of it to do a few of our own shows on the way, you know, home. And our last show was in London at the Marquee, and Metallica was rehearsing down at SIR Studios for their giant tour. And so they were, you know, getting ready, I'm sure, for their first show, maybe at Wembley Stadium or some gigantor right. dome or something, right? So we get a call from our management saying that, you know, they'd called and wanted to open up for us our show at the London Marquee, and we're like, oh, hell yeah. So, you know, they had their tech, Zach, who we know, come down and talk to us at our sound check and said, all right, the boys will be showing up at, you know, before the show, and we'll go on and play. And so, sure enough, right before the doors opened and everyone came in, and Metallica guys came into our dressing room, and they said, hey, you can introduce us as Vertigo if you want. And so Mike Howe got to go step out on the stage and go, hello, London, you know, you're looking for Metal Church, but we have a special opening act, and here they are, Vertigo, and out steps Metallica and just blows the room away. And so then, you know, we watched them, and then after their set, they went out to the soundboard and watched our set, and then after that show, we all went out and to some club and had some drinks together, and so it was a nice, memorable night.
That's very cool, man. How was it like to follow Metallica that night?
Well, yeah, it's pretty intimidating at first because, you know, they're setting their drums up on the floor in front of yours, which is quite hilarious, and then you realize, you know, and you knew, it's not like we don't know this, but you're like, they don't need any room on stage. They're Metallica, right? So it was very uncompetitive, and we had a great show. It was intimidating at first, but I wasn't really intimidated. They're great guys and nice, and they weren't trying to intimidate us, of course. And so it was just like a friendship, friendly kind of thing, and we had a great show. The crowd went crazy, and it was a great night.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels with, you know, you guys and Metallica, you know, with John Marshall kind of pulling double duty there for a little while and stuff like that. So that's one of the nice things about, you know, bringing up Metallica in this. And that's, you know, one thing about those guys is that they've truly never lost that, you know, let's open for Metal Church. Let's unannounced play a 100-seater club. Let's, you know, like they just did for Record Store Day, played a record store, you know.
Right.
When, you know, it's just so cool to see a band still kind of have that underground roots or whatever that they seem to still have. So
well, because you can't, I mean, I'm sure bands like them and us too, any kind of band like that you miss when you get bigger and bigger. You've got these barriers put up between you and the crowd and these huge stages, and you know, you're playing out to masses, and there's it's like one big face out there, you know. And so
right. It
is a special thing to get inside of a club where you can see every face and what their expressions are and how happy they are, and you can touch them and all that. That's a very intimate setting, so who wouldn't want to get back to that?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. It's that's just one thing that's always nice, and it's funny to me, because you know, to see them still doing stuff like Record Store Day, things like that, and then you got, on the other hand, you have Guns N' Roses doing all this just insane you know, stadium tours and getting ready for that too. So I mean, you know, I guess they also played a few kind of quote unquote secret troubadour shows and things like that, but okay. It's just the scale of those two bands, and you know, and it just kind of feel like they're on the opposite ends, to where I think Metallica still has a little bit of a sense of humor about them, and you know, Guns N' Roses is almost like a business.
Yeah, little, you know, blue collar guys, Metallica, you know, awesome,
exactly.
You know.
Very cool. And we'll just jump onto the large metal breasted woman in the room hanging in the balance.
Yeah,
you know. What? Explain to me that cover, please. That's all
yeah.
I can say.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it was our management that brought it up. You know, they said my understanding is it was an artist who did Grateful Dead stuff, which I don't know what that would have any connection with Metal Church, but it was you know, a management decision, and they paid this guy, I don't know how much, to draw something up, and I hated it. It was embarrassing, and I said, there's no way I want this as the record cover. And you know, unfortunately, back then at my age, and you know, who I was at that time and who we weren't the businessmen that we should have been in the band. And, you know, that was part of a big part of the downfall of Metal Church and the breakup of Metal Church, is because we weren't business-minded and we couldn't stand up for what we believed in. And so we got pushed around a little. And in that area, we were pushed around by a management company. And I regret not standing up and saying something to the effect of, I will not continue on in Metal Church if this album cover comes out. But I should have, but I didn't. So that's, you know, you're young and you take away things like that. So now, to me, the redemption for those kind of things is today, in the last year and a half to 2 years, is Kurt and I being able to put out a product that we fully are in control of every aspect of the image, of the sound, of the songs. That is really like a redemption and something that we, you know, got to close a door on, you know, in our lives.
Right.
So it was very, special to us.
So, kind of just talking about the business a little bit, we bring it up a lot, well, on the podcast, but talking to people about, you know, when they got signed in the late '80s, as opposed to like how the record business is today. I mean, what do you see as like the major differences?
Well, I mean, there's no really big record companies anymore, right? As far as I
yeah.
know, you know, it's all small labels. Like our Rat Pack Records, a great label. Joe O'Brien at Rat Pack, you know, I could call him any time of the day right now and ask him a question, and he's happy to talk to me and, you know, and give me answers. And I know he's working his ass off for us, and that means a huge amount to me, you know, to know that they really care about you and know that they're working for you, and I see it and I hear it. So that's a big difference. And you don't need, you know, with the advent of technology, you don't need a huge budget for a giant studio. Studios don't exist that much anymore, giant studios, because the technology makes it simpler for to have home studios where you can record, and that's what Kurt has. He has his own studio, so the cost of recording a record has been cut to, you know, zero almost, you know. And
yeah,
so these kind of things are the advantage of the record business these days. And so, but the downfall obviously is the internet. You know, people share and steal your music without paying you for it, so you can't sell as many records. So it's kind of an offset thing, but it's still a tough business to be in.
You know, with the new album kind of coming out and debuting at number 57 on Billboard, I mean, even in today's climate, I mean, that's a huge deal for a band that wasn't too far off from you know, the mid-2000s. And, you know, you guys, I don't know how you phrase it, but, you know, they were putting out albums still that people weren't really buying. And then you come back and there's so much life breathed back into the band, and so much you know, like the internet went crazy. Like when the first post popped up that said Mike Howe is back, and that picture of you and the classic picture of you, and you know, the people are sharing it like crazy. My friends are texting me, calling me, like, you know, did you see that Mike's back in Metal Church? You know, it's such a huge deal, and it was so great to see the fans come out and, you know, purchase the record, buy the pre-sales, all that stuff. So it's just a great time for you guys. I mean, how does that make you feel, you know, seeing all just this huge groundswell of people getting back into Metal Church?
I mean, it's huge. It's I'm almost like, I'm not worthy, you know, kind of thing, you know,
right?
And you know, it's hard to process, but it is such a great, warm feeling to see all those people out there that still, you know, want to hear your music. It's hard to, you know, put in words, really, other than the gratitude I feel for it all and how it makes me feel just blessed in my life.
You know, I know it's not your era of Metal Church, but when Stone Sour covered The Dark, how did that help out the band? Or, you know, how did that, what was the reaction, you know, within the Metal Church community?
I have to be honest, I heard it and it sounded great. I thought they did a great job of it. How it affected Metal Church's popularity, I could not tell you. Those are like nebulous kind of things to me. It's like, who made the internet and how does it work? I don't know.
Well, we all know Al Gore made the internet.
Sure, but same kind of thing is like, you know, that's cool, and it came out, and people are stoked, and it sounds great to me, you know. But how does it affect our band directly? I don't really know, but
if you could tell where maybe kids were coming up to you and say, I heard about you through Stone Sour or anything like that.
No, not to this date. I mean, we've only done, you know, so I'm going to count 14, 15, 16, and 18 shows so far. So, you know, most of it is coming up and saying, oh my God, it's so awesome you're back. And I'm like, hey, it's awesome I'm back. It's great to see you. That's been awesome. The crux of our conversation so far. And it's awesome just standing there, you know, face to face with people going, oh my God. Oh, and I'm saying, oh my God. And they're saying, oh my God.
Right. Oh my God, it's you. Oh my God, it's you.
Yeah, that's what right. I say. It's you. And they're like, it's you.
So when Kurt came on the podcast, he kind of made some Nirvana comments that took the internet by storm.
Sure.
So, you know, I just wanted to see, like, you know, what interactions maybe did you have with those guys? I mean, kind of being in a band in the Seattle area in the late 90s when those, the late 80s when those bands right. kind of started forming and things like that. You know, what was your take on the grunge scene at the time?
Well, I mean, it was all past, you know, when I got there. Things were full blown, you know. I never met any of those guys or knew any of those guys personally, you know. Kurt had already, because Kurt grew up there, so he knew them from when they were younger and when they weren't popular. So when I joined the band, they were already popular and things were blowing up there, you know. But, you know, looking back, it's another genre of music that people loved. And, you know, just like any genre of music, to me, there's good, average, and bad in anything. And so I appreciate all genres of music, and I love music as a whole, and I try to find any good in anything because I know there is out there. And when I hear something that excites me or resonates with me in that specific genre, it's awesome. Because that's what music is. It's awesome, no matter what, who's playing it or what it is. If it's good and it moves you, then it's special.
Yeah, what's crazy to me is now classic rock radio is starting to play, you know, the grunge era songs, and it's so funny to hear like a Nirvana song alongside of, you know, Fog Hat and stuff on classic rock radio now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to say one thing about Nirvana because I don't really have an opinion on them. You know, they had a great album, there's no doubt, you know. But when I went back to Aberdeen for the first time in 20-some years, the sign coming to Aberdeen says, come as you are. So you're like, it's commercialized, right? And then and then we did a little junket, you know, a press junket, and the guy who is the photographer and videographer of the press junket was a huge Nirvana fan, and he was stoked just to be in that town More so, I think, to because Nirvana was there, and he went down and bought like this little vial of to keep water, a casket that they sell at this little hole in the wall Nirvana souvenir shop, and he came down and he got some water from the muddy Wishka River, where, you know, it was in a Nirvana song, and you're like, wow, this is fanaticism at its best. So it's just it's an impressive thing, and it's a phenomenon, and I don't fully understand it, but it is what it is, and.
Yeah, it was definitely a crazy time, man. And you know, I hate bringing up those like Nirvana grunge questions with guys, but I mean, you know, you guys were kind of in the thick of it. You know, I guess I could have went, you know, what were your thoughts on Queensryche too? But
sure,
you know, could have went that way too. So
sure, you know, it's always frustrating for a band that comes from a town like Seattle, and we feel like, you know, we're worthy of a note, you know, in that town, you know, where you feel like, hey, we're respected in the metal world, and we live in Seattle, and we feel like we're being shunned by the Seattle scene, you know? Just because grunge is the most popular at this time doesn't mean you should just shun the other sons of the city, right? And I think that's what the band felt was happening. But I think it's human nature, you know, I guess.
I'd watched might have been the Dave Grohl documentary or whatever, but he was doing the city by city thing. And when they were talking about Seattle, I'm almost positive, you know, they talked about Heart, and then they're like nothing happened until 1988, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there was a grunge scene, you know, and I'm like sitting there screaming at the TV. I'm like, Metal Church was there. What's wrong with you people? But
exactly. We're the redhead's stepchild, or we're the Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah. We get no respect. All right, man. And just last question, man. What's going on with Metal Church? What are the touring plans? And, you know, when will we see you guys back on the road?
Well, we did the Monsters of Rock cruise. It was our first big, you know, foray out. And then we just got done with 3 weeks over in the East and New England states and Midwest. And we're going to head back out in another week and a half to head over to Germany and Europe and do some festivals. And then we're looking into maybe some West Coast. I can't say for sure, but we're looking into something in June, possibly on the West Coast, but that's not for sure yet. And then July and August, we're back over to Europe for those 2 months doing big festivals, because they love their metal festivals over there. And so we'll be doing those in July and August this summer, and doing some other shows around those festivals. And then hopefully in the fall, September-ish, we'll start showing up some plans to do things in the States. That would be exciting.
That's awesome. Oh, yeah, one last thing. I've actually wanted to just tell you this, and I might even cut this out of the podcast, but it's so funny when the movie Titanic came out and, like, all of the all the references in it, and I'm like, I already knew it because of the Metal Church song about, you know, about the Titanic, and I'm like, yeah, it's the Belfast Shipyard and all that stuff. You're like,
yeah.
It's so funny when that
came out. Educational metal.
Right? It was super. And my wife one day, she was talking about the Titanic, and she was like, I think it sank, you know, how many ever years ago today? And I'm like, no, the date is this. And I was like, you know, it was 1912. And she's like, how do you know the date of the Titanic sinking? And I'm like, Metal Church. Yeah. That's how I know.
That's right. Metal educates.
Metal education.
That's hard.
All right,
that's
Mike.
Funny.
Thanks for taking some time, man.
Awesome, Josh. Thank you for supporting us and getting the word out. All right.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we are here with Steve and Anthony. We're going to do a little something old, something new with some Metal Church here. So we're going to do the new album, 11, and the something old will be Blessing in Disguise. So Steve and Anthony, thanks for taking some time tonight, man.
No problem. I thought from the intro that I was the something old, but that's good that we're going to. Huge Metal Church fan. Thank you so much for having me on. Love metal, love talking metal, love being around metal people.
Very cool. And Steve and Anthony is the co-host of Pro Wrestling Cast, which you can find weekly on your favorite podcast apps. So if you're into pro wrestling and into podcasting, there's your man right there.
Yeah, and metal goes hand in hand with pro wrestling, as we've seen the last 15, 20 years. So yes. It's a similar fan base, really.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So let's get into Blessing in Disguise. And Blessing in Disguise by Metal Church is their third studio album, and it was released February 7th, 1989. So, Stephen, how did you come across Blessing in Disguise?
I am so glad you asked me this question. You know, I'm from a small town in South Louisiana. We were talking about this earlier. And there's nothing bigger in South Louisiana than metal, you know, and lots of metal bands and stuff. And all the kids were listening to metal. I was 11. We were listening to fucking Slayer and shit, you know, already. We were like in the sixth grade, you know. And so we used to watch Headbangers Ball, right? Yeah, I know, right? We used to watch Headbangers Ball, and the video for this song, Badlands, comes on. And I got to tell you, from the moment I heard it until the moment I was jamming it in the car the other day, that is the most badass song, right? So, like, you know, I was immediately into fucking Metal Church from that moment. The video was kind of different and cool. You know, the lyrics were about something kind of, you know, it weren't talking about girls, 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 and this or that, or wasn't about Satan. It was really just a very interesting subject matter. And they're jamming out in the desert, and the bass player's looks like a biker and stuff. And, you know, the lead singer singing like Bruce Dickinson and Jeff Tate kind of high notes. And I was immediately a huge fan from that moment. So,
yeah, I think I got into Metal Church a few years after that. I was kind of one of those metal kids that, you know, early 90s, 91, 92, I kind of went backwards with Metal Church. We got into The Human Factor and, right. You know, through their shared connection with Metallica, with John Marshall kind of pulling double duty, and, you know, Metallica taking Metal Church out, we were all like, you know, basically Metallica gave them the stamp of approval. So, you know, we kind of went into it, and then the more I got into it, I went back to Blessing in Disguise, and just I absolutely fell in love with that album. And same thing, man, Badlands is such just an epic song from beginning to end. And, you know, you've got you know, the Titanic song, what is that, Rest in Peace?
Yes. Excellent.
Yeah, Rest in Peace is such a crazy song.
Where I just got to say, though, about since we're just because we're on the subject of it, but just listening to Badlands again the other day, I mean, what a unique song they really put together to have things like, you know, to have things like acoustic guitars come in the bridge section of it, and like to have a bass solo. It's just really an intense album. And you bring up Rest in Pieces. I think that's really their best riff. Or you know, I would assume Kurt wrote that. Am I correct about that? I bet I'm right. You know, that is the best riff. That kind of thing. Just totally awesome. I mean, of all the, you know, and I love the first album, you know. Wayne, the first singer, is killer to me, you know. Mm-hmm. I even like some of his band Reverend, but to come in with a new guy and just blow it up like that, man. Yeah, who would write a song about the Titanic? Exactly.
Actually, on the as most people have heard if they're listening to this episode of the podcast, but you know, Mike Howe and I go into that, and we kind of joke about it, you know, being educational metal, because, you know, at that point, you know, obviously Titanic wasn't out yet, and everything around it. So, it, you know, when Titanic, the movie, comes out, I already knew everything about the Titanic. I'm like, you know, Belfast Shipyard and all that stuff. It's all in the lyrics. And I was actually listening to Blessing in Disguise today while at work, and I was, you know, just driving around listening to it, and, just the subject matter of all the songs. It's like when heavy metal was like such a time to where they could write these epic songs about, you know, fake healers and you know, obviously, yeah, you know, the Titanic and, you know, all kinds of just crazy stuff going on in the lyrics.
You know, I feel the same way about Iron Maiden too. They have the song Alexander the Great, which is similar. It has a date by the title, you know, and and I did learn about, you know, historical things. I remember being in history class, and it's like, you know, who is Alexander the Great's father? It's like, oh, it's Philip of Macedonia. So it sounds like you're smart. Now, you've actually been listening to Somewhere in Time and jamming it out with its riffs, you know, and, you know, again, Metal Church takes a different approach to writing music. You know, it's hard to categorize them, and they don't just write lyrics about, you know, the same old silly stuff. So that's what I appreciated about them, too. I'm anxious to hear that interview.
Yeah, well, it was a fun one, man. And the one thing with this album, too, is I noticed, you know, kind of listening to it in the analytical mind today was, you know, the new wave of British heavy metal that they had going on in there with, like, the marchy songs, like, dun, 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 dun. You know, like they had a bunch of songs like that, and that even actually carries over to 11 when we get to talk about that one.
Yeah,
there's so many songs on there that, you know, have that kind of marchy sound to it, you know, to where it's like a Creeping Death or an Am I Evil. They reminded me a lot of that, and it dawned on me that you have to go back to, you know, the new wave of British heavy metal, and you could tell it's just all over this album.
What's really interesting about them, I'm glad you brought that up, new wave of British heavy metal seems to be their main influence, but they also, I guess, you know, they have a lot of origins in San Francisco, you know,
yeah.
They're really considered a Seattle or really Aberdeen band, but that San Francisco thrash kind of whatever is in there too, and that's what I'm, you know, you say Am I Evil, those tracks with that sort of syncopated riffage, so it's like new wave of British heavy metal combined with that too, you know, because, like, you know, you got Angel Witch and Samson and things like that in early Iron Maiden with Deano, and then you carry over into more of the thrash field. So they really, again, they don't really exactly fit into any genre, which is really cool. Obviously, they're a heavy metal band, but again, they do their own thing. They kind of combined a lot of things.
Well, the one thing, too, is crazy about this album is, you know, the complete overhaul in the band, because this is the album that, you know, Kurt kind of took off. He wrote a lot of the songs, but, he took a backseat and just became more of a producer side. And they bring in Mike Howe, and then they bring in John Marshall, and they bring in, I mean, it's like almost a different band. But yet, you know, they continue on with the success and, you know, actually almost take the formula of Metal Church and make it better, in my opinion.
I think so, too. You know, it's really interesting the direction he went as a guitar player and a songwriter and a conceptualizer for the band to sort of take a back seat to, you know, I know he eventually wouldn't go on tour, you know, and he was just writing, but you can always tell it's him, you know, especially
yeah.
Rest in Peace is Fake Healer. Some of these, you know, tracks, you can tell it's his type of riffing, or the song Metal Church itself. Like, you can tell it's his type of style. It's his type of riffage. His sort of progressive element of acoustic guitars and a sort of minor kind of melodicism mixed in with that riffage of thrash, early thrash San Francisco, not the fast stuff, and then all the way to new wave of British heavy metal. That is kind of who Metal Church are. It really comes from Kurt's hands. You know, I'm not trying to put down anybody else in the band, but I think the center of it all is the composition, those riffs.
Yeah, you know, let's go ahead and head on over to 11, and then we'll kind of tie them together here. But 11 is the 11th studio album, released March 25th, 2016, and is the band's first album in 23 years to feature Mike Howe. So the big story of this album was that Mike Howe returns to Metal Church after all these years. And, you know, when they first started showing the promo photos of him and stuff, and you know, you were just so curious to hear what it's going to sound like with him back in the band. And, you know, to me, Mike Howe is my era of Metal Church, you know, no offense to David Wayne, but, you know, Mike Howe was like the vocalist I got into, and I can go back and appreciate those early Metal Church albums. But to me, it's, you know, the Human Factor and Blessing in Disguise and those albums. So I was thoroughly excited to hear, you know, the new album. And what was your like opinion of the new album when you first listened to it?
What's funny is I thought, okay, I'm going to listen to this Metal Church album. I'm into the first Metal Church album with David Wayne. I'm into Blessing in Disguise. But, you know, they're going to try to get back with Howe, and it's going to be okay. It's actually an awesome album. It really can just – I was pleasantly surprised. I wouldn't say shocked, but, you know, because they have always been such a consistent band. But, I mean, it's the same elements that we were just discussing put in a new format. And the most compelling thing about the album is the fact that Howe sounds exactly the same –
exactly.
27 years after hearing that song Badlands for the first time, I mean, his hair is shorter. That seems to be the only thing different. He still has that interesting subject matter, You know, the riffs are still there. You know, I was just really surprised how good it sounded, and their ability to come up with choruses. I think there can't be enough said about that for a heavy metal band coming up with a strong chorus. Iron Maiden with the song Wasted Years. Metallica obviously has had several songs with choruses. That's what the metal band started to realize. The strong chorus is what propels the songs, right? Like the Beatles and Elvis. And Metal Church always knew how to do that. Look at the song Fake Healer, okay? Mm-hmm. Look where they went with that. It's got a great, beautiful, heavy metal chorus, okay? And that's something they've continued on. You know, it just kind of surprised me that, first of all, they could get back together and there not be an issue. You know what I mean? Because most people would think, okay, there's going to be a problem, you know, Metal Church is back together, but then, you know, some sort of riff happened. And there really wasn't. It just seems like they got back together and started right back where they left off. So I was completely impressed with the album. And I really mean that. I was very impressed.
Right. Yeah. And also, you know, we talk about like the syncopated riffing and stuff with like No Tomorrow and, you know, Killing Your Time. You know, when those videos, they came out with the video for Killing Your Time.
Yeah.
And just like, I was like, wow, I can't believe, you know, it's literally like they just, you know, started where they left off. And,
right.
You know, there was a time in Metal Church where, you know, Kurt was kind of continuing the band on with random members and random singers. And I can remember in the mid-2000s, you know, Metal Church coming through Nashville and playing the club called The Muse. And,
oh, really? And, I did not know that.
Yeah, they came through and played The Muse. I mean, so, like, they continued on and trudged ahead and tried to do some stuff, man. But, you know, when they said Mike Howe was coming back and the release was coming up, and then you start hearing the early songs, and they redid Badlands, which was cool, but, you know, I still love the production of the first one.
Yeah.
And then you started hearing the new album, which the production on this new album, I was jamming out to it in the car today, you know, kind of getting ready for the podcast, like I said,
right.
And just like, you know, you could crank it. It sounds like a Lamb of God album, but it's like Metal Church riffs and Metal Church vocals and stuff. So I can't say enough great things about the new Metal Church album. So if you're a Metal Church fan, you definitely need to be checking this out.
It really is an awesome album. The production is there. Killing Your Time is a great song. The opening track called Reset is a really good, again, syncopated, awesome riffage. Right away, you know what's happening. Hal comes in and he sounds awesome. Killing Your Time comes in after that. Again, great choruses, the whole thing. The production is completely there. And I don't know. It's just, I'm really impressed. What's another one? Needle and Suture was another one that kind of, one of the shorter tracks. There are a lot of very long tracks on here, which is similar to Blessing in Disguise, you know. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was the one thing with this was actually listening to it today. I was like, you know, some of these intros could be shaved down just a hair. You know, there's a couple that go on for a little while. And even on the Kurt Vanderhoof episode of the Talk To Me podcast, my wife listened to it. She was like, you know, the only thing that was crazy was trying to get to the actual interview because, like, I think I can't remember if I put Killing Your Time or No Tomorrow before the interview. But
I think it's
like
Killing Your Time.
Yeah, it's like so much, you know, so much intro and so much, you know, so much song before the actual interview. So that's the only negative I've heard. But, you know, they can definitely write a very long intro.
Well, they have an interesting kind of proggy era kind of section of the album where they go Signal Path into Sky Falls In. And that's about 15 minutes between those two songs combined. A lot of different things happening, a lot of changes. And that's something I probably wanted to bring up a little bit more, their proggy element. You know, obviously there's some sort of, you know, line back to Rush, you know, and bands like that. And I think if you talk to him right now, he'd probably say he was a Rush fan and he was a fan of some of those types of bands too, because there is that element to it as well, you know. But they really get off to a great start from really the first six tracks on it. It's incredibly solid. Not that it wanes or anything. I mean, the songs stay consistently catchy. I think that's what's important. And the production stays consistently strong. But they really pound out some really awesome ones early on.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing, too, is crazy is that, you know, obviously this 11 debuted on Billboard at number 57, which is an incredible, astonishing number, even
that's
in this
shocking,
day and age.
Shocking, actually.
And I was trying to think of other, like, kind of metal bands that were popular late 80s, early 90s that kind of came back around. And the only ones I could really think of that have kind of made this impact was like maybe like an overkill, like where they kind of left, and then they came back and had modern production, and you know, even like a Randy Bly from Lamb of God was on an Overkill song, things like that, to where they have, you know, a co-sign of someone current.
Well,
and
I would say Halloween. You know, it's funny we were talking about them the other day. They are the greatest. No, but I mean, Halloween continued on with they're very similar bands. They had three singers. They have different eras. They were big in 1989 in America with a video on Headbangers Ball and stuff. And they have very current. I mean, Halloween does the same thing. They have very current production. Of course, they don't tour in America like Metal Church does. Like, you know, they're in Germany and Japan and all that. And then I would say also the band Exodus would actually, you know, has been able to become very current in a thrashy sort of setting. But yeah, Metal Church is right up. I mean, I can't say enough good about the album. I just wanted to make people aware of the fact that I'm probably thinking the same thing you may have been thinking, that, okay, you maybe you've heard the Metal Church albums with the last singer before this one. This one really does tower over anything they've done. And would you say it's the best album since Blessing in Disguise? Is that an accurate thing?
I would say it's close. I mean, you know, Human Factor was obviously really good.
Sure.
You know, Hanging in the Balance was the one that was kind of the wild card there.
Okay.
But
do you think that Hanging in the Balance's album cover, do you think that was some sort of sabotage in a sense by the record company? Do you think that was no, I'm serious. Do you think that they were just trying to, I mean, you talked to him about it and he said it was a terrible cover.
Well, actually, Mike Howell actually answered that question a little bit better. And he said that it was the record label had got a guy that he had in the past done like Grateful Dead covers.
Okay.
And so they commissioned him to do a Metal Church cover, and they just didn't have the whereabouts or the knowledge at the time to put their foot down and say no. So they kind of got screwed in that aspect. That was Mike Howell's version of the story of how that album cover came about.
That sounds about accurate, because I would think that, you know, you know, that's such a record company sounding thing. Hey, the dude did Grateful Dead, and sure, Grateful Dead album covers look cool with drawings. And then you have a band that's in a situation where they've had some moderate success, probably sold 200,000 or 300,000 copies of, you know, Human Factor and Blessing. I'm just guessing. I know they didn't go gold, but I know they sold more than 100. And you know, you probably don't have the ability to say, hey, what is this crap? You know, and maybe, you know, 93 was a tough year on a lot of bands. You know, things got weird in 93, 94, 95. Look at Iron Maiden. Look what happened to them. I mean, that was sad when they got, you know, Blaze Bailey, and God bless him. It's just, you know, those albums are brutal. You know, he's not really there. Well, anyway, I think it may be the best album since Blessing in Disguise. That's kind of what I was, you know, I took a long way to get back to that. But
no, I absolutely agree with that. I agree with that statement. You know, there are a couple songs on Human Factor, obviously, but I mean, Blessing in Disguise is, you know, my number one, and, you know, and 11 does kind of come in right at, you know, number two, maybe two and 2A kind of thing for me. But, you know, just kind of getting into it, even though, you know, when I got sent the promo back in January or whatever, I was like completely blown away when I first got it. It was so much, because, I mean, there was so much hype, and they actually lived up to the hype. You know, there was so much Mike Howell's back in the band, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And so you get the album and you're like, all right, well, let's see what you got, Metal Church. And I hit play and I was like, Jesus Christ, took me right back to being, you know, 13, 14 years old, listening to Metal Church in my room at obscene volume.
Well, obscene volume is really the way to listen to them, you know, because, you know, you want the crunchiness in the full force. What's really cool about this is the idea that, you know, it's cool to just always play music, no matter who you are, or what age you get to, or where you're at, or what you've been through as a band. It's just cool to create music and continue to go on with it. It's kind of funny, too, when you were like, hey, do you want to do a podcast? And would you like to do this? And we're going to, you know, maybe compare the new album to Blessing in Disguise. But I hadn't heard it yet, but obviously you had. And I thought, I wonder why he wants to compare the new one to Blessing in Disguise. And then I kind of realized why as I was listening to it. So I'd like to thank you for turning me on to it, because, you know, again, I'm a big fan, and, you know, not that I, you know, I've always loved them. I mean, you know, obviously with the third singer, it was a little interesting. I'm sorry I'm not mentioning him by name, but, you know, It was just kind of an odd time. Not as bad as Blaze Bailey, you guys. I'm not putting no offense to Blaze. If you have him on the show,
no offense, Blaze Bailey.
Yeah, please don't beat me up with those big guns you got gone. I've seen you, but yeah.
All right, so you're the co-host of the Pro Wrestling Cast with my friend Al John Go.
Right.
All right. So let's take Metal Church's career.
Okay.
And then turn it into what is the wrestling equivalent of Metal Church?
Jeez, that's actually incredibly complex. Well, I mean, I guess Bob Backlund. Well, Bob, you know, Bob had a lot of success in the late 70s to early 80s. And then he actually came back to the main event, but it kind of took him a while. It took him about to 94, 95. But Bob always had the ideology that, you know, age wasn't really a factor in anything. It was just the idea of, you know, having confidence in yourself and continuing to do the things that you love to do and being strong and positive. So how about Bob Backlund as a comparison?
Was Bob Backlund doing that DDP yoga?
Bob Backlund is probably more in shape than you or I could ever be right now. He's in his late 60s. You know what? And you'll probably be seeing him on the wrestling show. He's going to do an angle with Darren Young where he's his life coach. So that should actually be terrible. But it'll be four horsemen.
Right. No, man, I earlier before we started talking, you know, I thoroughly enjoy listening to you and Al John rant about wrestling every week, man. And I'll do my best Al John impression. Steven, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, they can find me on Twitter at Dr. Deathmark. And I just wanted to say real quick one more thing.
Yeah.
Since I know Mike Howe's going to listen to this, you know, obviously, that my wife has the biggest crush on him. And she loves to watch the Badlands video, and I just wanted him to know that.
You know, it's funny, actually, I'll bring this up, too, is when they first started kind of putting out the Mike Howe's back, they used, like, an old, you know, old late 80s promo shot. And it really scared me because I'm like, man, what I wonder what he looks like now. He's going to be 300 pounds and, you know, half bald or whatever. But then they actually show him in the videos and stuff, and I'm like, oh, he actually aged extremely gracefully, you know.
It's always great, actually. His face looks great.
You know, they always joke about, you know, because like Wasp is still using, like, you know, 1980s promo stuff, and Black Lawless doesn't look very good these days.
Black Lawless has been eating them hamburgers, man. I mean, he's you know, he's been gotten very interesting. Black, he's gained some weight, which is fine. That doesn't matter. And he's a born again Christian, so now he sings his songs without the cursing. It's actually incredible. I'm a big Wasp fan too. We'll save that for the Wasp podcast. Maybe we can have Chris Holmes on.
We're going to have the Wasp cast.
Pro Wrestling Wasp cast with Mike.
Oh, man. Well, Steven, I definitely appreciate you taking some time. And did you get all your plugs out there? Dr. Deathmark on Twitter.
Dr. Deathmark on Twitter. I'm not a big plug guy. I just like to talk metal. And, you know, and I appreciate you having me on. And, you know, I'm glad to talk about Metal Church because Metal Church is fucking awesome. And that's just the way it is.
This is Frank Fosteray from Stuck Mojo and Fozzy, and you're listening to the Talk To Me podcast.
And a huge thank you to Mike Howe of Metal Church and Stephen Anthony of the Pro Wrestling Cast. Make sure to go and support both of those guys any way you can. And if you want to support the Talk To Me podcast, make sure you are subscribed on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Leave a rating and a 5-star review, and I will be so grateful. Also, if you want to support the Talk To Me podcast monetarily, head on over to patreon.com/talktome. You can get some bonus content, guest updates, and a lot of great stuff, all the way up to a bonus podcast a month. So head on over to patreon.com/talktome and check out what's going on over there. And just a huge thank you to puckhockey.com, and that's PUCKHCKY.com, and shop until you drop and enter talk at checkout for an additional 10% off your entire order. Yes, for my listeners, head over to puckhockey.com, enter talk when you check out for an additional 10% off your entire order. And thank you out there for checking out the Talk To Me podcast. Thank you for listening each and every week. Until Friday, I am Joshua Toomey, and this has been the Talk To Me podcast.